if you'd be seated. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in CMMC versus Salina.
May it please the court, Mr. Michael Levy will present argument to petitioner. His turn is there 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This is a case that needs to be reversed because my client, the petitioner and non-resident defendant, CMMC, does not have sufficient minimal contacts with the state of Texas, and the exercise of personal jurisdiction over CMMC in this case does not comport with traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. There are three reasons why the Court of Appeals judgment should be reversed. The first one is that the Court of Appeals improperly rejects the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Asahi Metal as the controlling case law. That's the first reason. The second reason is that the Court of Appeals misapplies the stream of commerce test announced in Worldwide Volkswagen by not examining whether or not there's a stream in the first place. Third, and lastly, the Court of Appeals improperly concludes that the exercise over a personal jurisdiction over CMMC is reasonable under the facts of this case. Ambrosio Salinas was an employee of Hill Country Cellars. He injured his arm while he was cleaning a grape press. That grape press was manufactured by CMMC in France. Now, CMMC doesn't have employees in the United States. They don't have employees in Texas. They don't have a marketing force in Texas. They don't market goods in Texas. They don't advertise goods in Texas. And they never anticipated or intended to be hailed into a court in Texas.
Was there warranty repair done in Texas?
No, the warranty repair work was done out in California at the request of KLR Machines.
Had it already been sent to Texas and sent back to California?
Right, so the motor had to be taken out and sent to California, where it was sent to a motor works out in California, and they did the repair to the motor itself. Now, the repairs to the motor had to do, because it burned out after the first use of the first grape crush. And there's no contention that this particular cause of action arises out of anything to do with the warranty work.
Isn't there a lot of evidence showing that that your client knew that this product was coming to Texas?
It's true. I'm not going to deny that they knew it was coming to Texas. There's correspondence going from CMC and KLR Machines, and this correspondence says references under the RE, it says Hill Country Cellars. And when it comes time to ship it, they know that it's going to the port in Houston. However, that fact in and of itself is not important to analyze the jurisdictional issue.
Isn't the Kawasaki case and the Kuhn case weighing against you?
The Kawasaki case, the Middleton versus Kawasaki case?
Yes.
No, that one doesn't weigh against us. The principal distinction is here on the stream of commerce, you know, that you must have a stream. In that case, and in almost all these other cases that the Court of Appeals cites, there is a stream. And let me give you a real good example here. If you take the Worldwide Volkswagen case.
See, that's a different case because they had no idea that that product was going to Oklahoma. That's that situation where a consumer just happened to drive through Oklahoma and there was the accident. That's not the situation here because they knew this product was going to Texas.
Right.
So the Worldwide Volkswagen doesn't apply to this case.
The analysis in Worldwide Volkswagen should apply to this case because it is a stream of commerce case. Just knowing where the product is going, mere awareness of where it is going, even on a Worldwide Volkswagen, is not enough. Now, what gets you in Middleton, what gets personal jurisdiction in that type of a case, is the volume of goods that's going through. And that's a distinction that comes out in Worldwide Volkswagen and comes out more clearly in Brennan's concurrence in Asahi Metals. What he says in Asahi Metals, you know, in his concurrence, he says that the stream of commerce refers not to an unpredictable current or eddy, but to a regular and anticipated flow of products. Regular and anticipated flow.
Well, this was anticipated.
But it sure wasn't regular. And he says he won't join the majority opinion in Sahih because he says, I cannot join the determination in Part 2A that Asahi's regular and extensive sales of component parts to a manufacturer it knew was making regular sales of the final product in California is insufficient to establish minimum contacts. Regular and extensive.
In Ashot Ascalon, we said, a defendant's delivering of its product into the stream of commerce with the expectation that the product will enter a foreign state will ordinarily satisfy due process. Is that just wrong? Or
it would be not
broad, or how would you characterize it?
I would characterize it as overbroad. I also, there's just not enough facts about Ashot's conduct in that case to make a clear decision on even whether the court is following Asahi or following, you know, the just straight stream of commerce test. There's this curious footnote number 2 in that opinion, which indicates that, you know, the distinction here is that you have a representative for Asahi who comes out and says, you know, look, we never thought we were going to end up in California. Now, that's the way the court distinguishes Asahi Metals, and if that's the distinguishment, if that's the distinguishing point, then we need it in this case because that's what the representative of CMMC said. However, we have to concede, I don't think that's probably the right test. But simply, there's just not enough facts and team to do anything with. We can't tell what the distribution was. We can't tell the volume. We can't tell whether or not it was regular and extensive sales. We would presume that that's the case, but we cannot tell.
So your position is that since this is a one-shot deal, there is no jurisdiction. But if they had done this on 10 or 20 separate occasions, then perhaps it would rise to the level of jurisdiction.
That's basically true. And I can reinforce that. Let's look at the Asahi Metals case. If you read Justice Stevenson's concurrence, he says that, you know, here there's 100,000 units annually over a period of several years. 100,000 annually over 7 years. Contrast our facts.
Surely CMMC anticipate being sued in California.
That's right.
And perhaps they don't anticipate being sued in Alaska.
That's right.
But Texas is a wine producer, and they're openly advertising their product, or know that their products are being advertised throughout the United States. Why would they anticipate being sued in Texas?
I don't think they know that their products are being advertised. That's unclear. Ivan Linderman says, we advertise them. You know, I think they know, but, you know, I don't know if they know that we're advertising their goods. But mere advertising across the United States, of course, is, you know, not something that's purposely directed towards Texas.
When you talk about regular this is a large piece of machinery. Is that correct?
Yes, yes it is, about 20 feet long.
And you would probably not sell more than one or two in an area, is that right?
Well, it all depends on the size of the winery. A large winery can have several presses. You can have several different types of presses, as I learned, and they're all different types. And depending on what kind of wine you want to make, you may use a different press.
Well, I think my point is, does it make a difference if the type of product it is, it's not a toaster where you would anticipate thousands. You would only anticipate a very small number in any state.
I think I can answer this question this way. The record reflects that in North America, that's Canada and the United States, there are 1,300 wineries. In the Champagne region of France alone, just the Champagne region, there are 10,000 wineries. Clearly, that's where the market is, and you can sell a lot of presses.
Well, is your argument that this type of machinery, if it were a one nuclear reactor sold in one state, that's not sufficient to the jurisdiction?
That's right. If it is an isolated example, an isolated sale, and it does not result from the activities of a non-resident defendant to purposely avail themselves of doing business in this state, but it's merely an isolated example, then there's not personal jurisdiction.
Your brief suggests because of the concern about
about the factual statement in the Court of Appeals opinion that if CMMC had directly shipped the press here, you might have a different outcome. Is that, are you, do you agree or disagree? You say on page 2 of your application, CMMC did not sell, ship, or market this great press or any other CMMC product to a Texas resident. In laying aside perhaps opposing counsel's view of things, if that's true, is that definitive? Is that determined minimum contact in this case?
It really does not. It makes the case a little closer. When you read the opinion, it makes it look like that CMMC was the driving force behind all of this. And that's not true at all. CMMC's only involvement in this case is setting the package press out on its loading dock in Chalon, France. At that point, it was up to KLR. KLR was the owner of the press. They had to get it and did get it all the way there to Cedar Park, Texas. KLR Machines was the owner of that press. And that's what their contract with Hill Country clearly indicates.
Would it, just to hopefully clarify what I perhaps muddled, if KLR had sent an order on Hill Country's behalf to CMMC and they directly shipped the press to Hill Country sellers, would there be a different outcome or not?
I would still contend that that situation is an isolated sale.
Well, wouldn't that be a purposeful act done to or consummate a transaction of foreign state, which would get the plaintiff over the hump?
No, it's not. There's nothing in that situation where CMMC is purposefully availing itself of the right to conduct activities in Texas. What they've done in that situation is agreed to sell the press and at the customer's direction, you know, put it on its way. The case, you know, fortunately, I don't have that situation because this party, KLR Machines, which is unrelated to CMMC, is in there. You know, they sell on behalf of a lot of different manufacturers, and they take care of all the shipments, and they do it.
So if KLR was out of the picture and it was just a direct order, there would be minimal contact here?
No.
Direct order from Hill Country sellers and a shipment to their winery.
There we go. That would be. The best example would be if someone from CMMC comes to Texas and goes to Hill Country and says, you know, don't y'all know that we have the best presses in the world? And here they are, and they select one of them, and it's bought and paid for and shipped. That's the best scenario. Because there we have a purposeful availment. We're sending someone there to do it. In the scenario that you created, there's still that situation where you still have, you know, the unilateral activity of the customer going and, you know, getting the press and bringing it to Texas. And under Worldwide Volkswagen, that's not supposed to be enough to confer personal jurisdiction. There's one case that I came across that's not in the brief that I found to be a pretty good case for analyzing this issue. This is called Damu Rodriguez versus the Hughes Aircraft Company, and just the Hughes Aircraft Company case. It's out of the First Circuit in 1986, and it's at 781 F. 2nd, page 9. Context is that this case is before the Asahi Metal case, and so the court is applying the Worldwide Volkswagen. In this case, Hughes Aircraft Company is the non-resident defendant. There is an intervening middle party. It's called Aircraft Rental. Aircraft Rental submits a bid to the Puerto Rican Police Department to sell them two Hughes aircraft. That bid is ultimately accepted, and the Puerto Rican Police Department gets two Hughes helicopters. Well, one of the helicopters crashes, and so there's a wrongful death action, and the question is, do you get personal jurisdiction over Hughes aircraft? And what the First Circuit says, and again, using the Worldwide Volkswagen background, says, we do not think that the sale of two helicopters to a police department can be the source of a stream of commerce. The sale here was not a stream or the beginning of one. It was an isolated splash. It was not the type of a transaction that could reasonably lead a manufacturer to believe would be the basis of hailing them into a court in Puerto Rico. And then the court goes on to say, we don't think that whether Hughes knew where the helicopters were being sold to the Puerto Rican Police Department has any jurisdictional significance. The test is whether or not the defendant purposely avails themselves through their marketing activities to do business in the foreign state.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, Mr. Bill McNeil will present argument for the response.
May it please the court. This case is very important to the jurisprudence of the state because under the Keene versus Ashot Ascalon case, this is a case of specific jurisdiction as opposed to minimum contacts. The Keene case set forth the difference and the distinction between imposing jurisdiction of Texas courts on a foreign defendant not arising out of specific conduct or a specific occurrence, but in general terms based on minimum contacts. That is a specific number of sales or sales contacts or services within the state. But in Keene, this court made clear that there is another category that involves what is called specific jurisdiction, in which the cause of action of the plaintiff is alleged to arise out of a specific act in this state by a foreign defendant. In this case, that is the situation. The plaintiff's case is a product liability case. He was injured while washing out this machine. The machine drug his arm into it, almost ripped it off. And the allegations in the plaintiff's pleadings, which are taken as true for jurisdictional purposes, are that this was due to a product defect in the very product that was sold in this case.
But in Keene, as in any other case in this area, our court follows what the United States Supreme Court said.
Yes, Your Honor.
And really, to look at our interpretation from 8 years ago of United States Supreme Court cases seems to be almost a waste of time. It seems to me we should be focusing on what the court has written.
If the United States Supreme Court has in fact overruled or differed with that view, and I take it and I submit to the court that the Asahi case does not do that. The Asahi case says at page 1032, I think the important language is this: the placement of a product into the stream of commerce without more is not an act. An act. It doesn't talk about minimum contact of the defendant purposefully directed toward the forum state. And then the real important language: additional conduct of the defendant may indicate an intent or purpose to serve the market in the forum state. I believe that's what the evidence in the Kawasaki Steel case really related to, not a question of minimum contacts or number of occurrences or number of sales contacts, but the question of evidence of intent to serve the market. In the Kawasaki Steel case, the court will remember that Kawasaki had an agent in Houston, in the port of Houston, that was designed to, in effect, advertise, do product service, and help with their customers throughout the United States, not just Texas. It just happened to be located in Houston. There had been more than one sale in that case. But in that case, the specific defect that was alleged was for drilling pipe, and it was alleged that this defective drilling pipe had caused problems with the well. It was a third-party claim, as I recall, against the manufacturer. So that, again, was specific conduct.
Counsel, do you agree that with your opposing counsel that CMMC did not sell with Great Press to Hill Country Sellers?
Your Honor, technically they sold it to its distributor, who paid for it, KLR, and then it was shipped through KLR. That, I think, does not answer the question, though.
When they say distributor, were they more of a broker than a distributor?
Well, Your Honor, there's a curious response to our request for admissions about that. It's not a complete admit, but it's not a deny. Basically, that is, KLR Machines, Inc., with offices in Sebastopol, California, and Bath, New York, are the exclusive North American representatives of defendant in selling and distributing defendant's products in the United States. And the response was, admit that a person or business may purchase CMMC products either directly from CMMC or through KLR Machines, Inc., and that the latter is the only entity in the United States with CMMC products available for sale. I take that as being an admission that they are their exclusive North American distributors. The following one asks whether KLR Machines, Inc. is authorized by defendant to advertise defendant's products to wineries and other prospective purchasers within the United States. And the response to that is, admit that promotional material on CMMC products, including Vaseline wine presses, is available through KLR Machines, Inc. Deny that CMMC directly markets its products or advertises in the United States or more particularly Texas. So in other words, I take those to mean that KLR does its advertising for it, takes its orders for it, and they ship through this exclusive distributor.
If CMMC did not sell this wine press directly to Hill Country sellers, how did it purposely do some act or consummate some transaction in Texas?
Because the evidence is clear that it was selling through a distributor, and that is that even though technically the sale may have occurred to KLR, which is a distributor who resold, it is clear from the evidence and a lot of the documentary evidence that is in Plaintiff's Exhibit 1 that I summarized for the trial court indicates that it was known at the time of the shipment that the machine was definitely going to Hill Country sellers, that that was the ultimate consumer. And I take it that purposeful does not require that a sale be direct, that it doesn't require direct privity. There's never been any indication of that in the case law. But purposeful means that even through an independent distributor, the manufacturer is intentionally directing this product to Texas. The Kawasaki
there's nothing that a foreign manufacturer can do to arrange a sales transaction through an intermediary or some other way to avoid Texas acquiring specific jurisdiction over a personal injury claim involving that product. Is that correct?
I follow that, and I think that what a manufacturer could do is say, we don't want to know where it's going. Now,
that's the only way they can avoid it.
Well, I believe that in the, of course, the Asahi case, in a case where the manufacturer is selling a component that's going to Taiwan, I don't think you ever get to that question. But in a case where there's a direct shipment to the state of Texas, I believe that that's what the due process analysis is all about.
So there is no way that a foreign manufacturer can avoid a lawsuit in the state of Texas by structuring the transaction through an intermediary?
I don't believe so, unless they have no knowledge that it's going to the state of Texas, and they therefore remove the purposeful aspect of it. The Kawasaki Steel case also involved an independent distributor. The steel was not purchased directly from Kawasaki, but through a distributor, and I don't think that's been in any way affected by the United States Supreme Court's rulings. I believe this court's view of that case is sound. The fact in the modern business world as to whether or not an independent distributor is used is really of no moment. If a manufacturer of a product is intentionally selling its products in the state of Texas, could this court in good conscience truly say that they're not subjected to jurisdiction if they sell through a distributor, but they are subjected to the jurisdiction of Texas courts if they do not, if they sell directly? That does not appear to me to be a reasonable result.
Mr. Eadie seems to, as I understand Mr. Eadie's argument, he really says where the TA messed up is they give the statement of what they're looking at, but what they fail to see is there's no stream of commerce here. Taking everything that you have said, that I manufacture these presses, the vast majority of the market's in France, but if I could sell it to the United States, I'd be happy to sell it to the United States. And some distributor comes up and says, well, we'd be happy to distribute it. Fine, I'll give you an exclusive, you go distribute it, and they go to the United States. Mr. Eadie would say, well, that's all well and good, but if they only sell one, there is no stream of commerce to begin the inquiry as to whether or not there's minimum contact, either specific or otherwise. In other words, I sell one to Alaska, I sell one to California, I sell one to New York. It would seem, according to his argument, that wouldn't give them jurisdiction in any of those places, simply because there's not a stream of products moving through the broker into any particular site.
In my mind, Justice Enix, that gets the cart before the horse. I believe that the stream of commerce doctrine was a doctrine that was designed to submit foreign manufacturers or other defendants to jurisdiction who had not made a direct contact, such as in this case. For example, in the early cases in which the manufacturer simply placed the product in the stream of commerce, not directed toward Texas, but with the reasonable expectation, as stated in Kawasaki, which has been affected by the Asahi case, with the reasonable expectation that it would arrive in Texas because it was known at the time that it was placed into the stream of commerce that Texas was a potential market. So in essence, I believe Mr. Eady is getting it backwards. He doesn't need, you don't need stream of commerce in a case in which the product was shipped directly to Texas because it got here directly from France. It didn't go to New York and then through the stream of commerce happened to get here. And I don't think stream of commerce, therefore, is an argument that the plaintiff needs in this case. And I also think that that also bears a little bit on the distinction between the specific jurisdictional analysis and a minimum contacts analysis, which I would submit, counsel, is confusing. I believe that the Kawasaki Steel case is still good law, that a specific instance arising out of, as in this case, a product defect in which the plaintiff is injured, is enough without there being evidence of multiple or continued sales. In this case, for example, the winemaker of Hill Country Winery used to live in California. Probably because of this wine industry developing in Texas, she first moved here to West Texas and then was hired by Hill Country Cellars. Because of having attended trade shows and also seeing advertisements in magazines, she knew about the products involved that were sold by KLR, including this particular Vaseline product, as well as some others that KLR distributes that are manufactured by different manufacturers, Bucher presses. So, to say that a certain number of minimum contacts is necessary when, as a result of this advertising and general knowledge, trade shows in which this distributor puts on, a Texas company buys one of these machines and it's shipped directly to Texas from France, I don't see that the stream of commerce is an argument that we really need to get into. That's my personal view, but that's the way I see the cases. In addition, in this case, I want to call the court's attention to certain parts of the statement of facts regarding post-sale activity.
Mr. McNeil, are there finds of fact and conclusions of law in this case?
No, Your Honor, there are not. The volume 3 of the statement of facts is numbered by the base stamps in the written deposition of the of KLR, the distributor. And at page 144, there is a request for the manual directions for utilization and maintenance of the CDP 700 from KLR to the manufacturer. On two pages prior to that, there is an answer. It references Hill Country Cellars, as all of these documents, or most of the documents, do from CMNC, knowing that this is the ultimate consumer, that this is the user of the product. And it says, we are pleased to let you know that the manual has been already sent to you last week. Then there's a memo to the winemaker enclosing the manual from KLR. There is another series of memos at about page 180, which involves hooking up the press. Apparently it was not hooked up right, and the factory had to tell the distributor in a memo at page 181. There's a memo from Katya Marev to Peter Allen, who's with KLR, saying, I asked for confirmation the technical department regarding the cable. They told me that when you hook up the cable, cable 14 to terminal 6 and 8, the safety switch is in series to other safety switches and not in parallel. There is a request at page 192 for that information. My only point is the manufacturer knew before the sale occurred. There's actually an acknowledgement in a memo that is part of Plaintiff's Exhibit 1 that is on page 66, in which it says, thank you very much for providing us with your outstanding sales probability. I would like to let you know the availability regarding these prospects. and one of them listed as hill country. They knew about it before, they knew about it during, at the time that it was shipped, it was going to hill country sellers, and afterwards they knew when there was some problem about hooking up the machine. It's not in the record in this case because for economic reasons I have not developed the liability facts and in fact had little cooperation from the winery to even get access to see the machine for a long time. But it may very well be that there were electrical problems because the machine did not cut off, as the manual said, when Mr. Salinas stuck a water hose in it. The manual said that if you don't stick anything in the machine because it will cause the automatic shutoff device to activate. That didn't happen. It pulled his arm in. And my only point in getting into this is that to say that a manufacturer who knows its product is going to be used, particularly Justice Spector, as you mentioned, it's not like selling toasters. This is a product that requires a correct setup. The manufacturer was involved in that setup as far as the wiring is concerned. They knew that it was going to be used in a winery. They were intimate with the operations of it, obviously far more than the distributor in this case. So to say that merely by using a distributor, the jurisdictional power of the Texas courts, and including only a distributor, is being fairly and reasonably exercised, I think is wrong.
Clarify one thing for me, if you would, and that is, did CMMC ship it only to a location in France, and then someone else was responsible for shipping it from there to Houston?
It's my understanding from the documents that are here that CMMC placed an FOB at their factory to a French carrier who carried it to the port of Le Havre. There it was placed on a ship, a Mexican ship, the Jalisco, and shipped to the port of Houston.
And who was responsible for that?
Well, if you mean legally responsible, probably the sale was made FOB at the factory, as Mr. Eady says. But the truth is that you can look at memos instructing, sending KLR messages that the Jalisco is delayed until the 22nd of July, for example. So the factory was making these arrangements, even though the shipment was going through the distributor, and the product did belong to the distributor legally once it got on the truck in France. There's a memo which refers to, as I recall without looking at it, the fact that the product would be ready on a certain date, would be picked up by, and it names, I think it's Germain is the name of the carrier that will take it to, that will truck it to the port. So they knew exactly how it was going to get to Texas.
So before the product left France, it was already the property of the distributor?
Legally, I believe that's correct. It was the property of the distributor before it left France. But the manufacturer knew where it was going. Now, I think it's very important to keep in mind that if that is enough to escape the jurisdiction of the Texas courts, the Texas residents and companies and entities will have to litigate in foreign courts anytime that situation arises. The question under due process is it fair? Does this afford the manufacturer due process? Reasonable expectation was used as the standard in the Kawasaki case. The Asahi case and subsequent cases, I think, do not affect that except insofar as it requires purposeful conduct. To say that the manufacturer knows that this machine is going to be shipped to Texas and used by a Texas company with Texas workers working on it and subjecting themselves to any risk that a defect would raise, and yet would not be subject to the jurisdiction of Texas courts in the event of an injury or in the event of some other cause of action by a Texas company or a Texas individual, merely because they were smart enough to structure so that they sold it to a distributor and the actual sale occurred in France, so that legal title passed first, I would submit to the court is not a fair analysis or not a fair application of due process. Is it reasonable for them to expect to be hauled into a Texas court, the language used in one of the cases? There was one response by, I think, in the application, in which CMMC says, we didn't expect to be hauled into a Texas court. The question is, was that lack of expectation reasonable?
But you say they shouldn't be allowed to use a distributor. get out of personal jurisdiction.
Yes.
But they could just sort of stay ignorant.
Well.
And so what is, how is that any less reprehensible, staying ignorant,
well, I think
using a distributor?
I agree, Justice Heck, because so, that's sort of a devil's advocate position that I took.
But really there would not be any way out, in answer to Judge Corner's question. In your view, there really wouldn't be. You couldn't use that any more than you could use a distributor.
Not only wouldn't there be, but there shouldn't be, is my point. Because when they are actually knowing that their product is going into a certain market, the question back in Kawasaki and also in Asahi is an intent to serve the market. And the question before this court is, can that intent to serve the market be shown through an isolated one single transaction? I think the answer is yes. And I think in this case, the fact that that was purposeful is not affected by the fact that it was sold through a distributor.
Any other questions? Thank you.
There's a distinction on that second part of the jurisdictional analysis when you're trying to determine whether or not the exercise of jurisdiction is fair. I mean, clearly there's a higher jurisdictional barrier to roping in an international defendant, because what we're doing in this situation is we're taking our notions of personal jurisdiction and we're interjecting it into the international field. And clearly there has to be there has to be a more compelling reason to do that, and the term is a great care and reserve to do so.
So probably there's no state where jurisdiction is improper.
In this particular case, arguably California may be.
Because of general context. Because of general context.
Yes.
That
would
count for.
Yes, yes, sir. That's right.
Something that bothers me a little bit about this, why shouldn't CMMC be sued in Texas? And I ask that question from this. Suppose that you're a manufacturer of a big product for which there are very few customers. They pay an awful lot of money for it. It's a worldwide product. I mean, it's something that can be used in any number of different countries. I have virtually no distribution system, but I will sell it to anybody who asks to buy the product. And I sell it to Cedar Park, the Hill Country sellers. And the product causes injury to a resident of Texas in Texas. What is the lack of due process for this manufacturer, wherever they existed, to have to go to the site where their product caused an injury?
Due process is supposed to be a limitation on those circumstances where you can structure your primary conduct where you can avoid this situation happening. There has to be some type of activity that we can all agree upon, that if you engage in this activity, you can be expected to show up in that state and appear before their courts. The question is, under the facts of this case, you have to exclude all the activity of the consumer of Hill Country, and you have to exclude the activity of the distributor. Now, if you exclude all of that, and you isolate just CMMC's conduct, this French corporation's conduct, in agreeing to sell this product to KLR Machines, California company, and to set it out on the dock in France. If you view it in that light, that's clearly unfair to require them to come defend an action in Texas.
Why is it unfair? What's the unfairness about? I mean, we're talking about specific jurisdiction here. We're not talking about just hauling them in for any claim you've got against them. We're talking about their product causes injury. What's unfair to make them come to where the injury occurred and where the product is? Defense.
Minimum contacts means it's you as defined by the U.S. Supreme Court, means you must have engaged in some type of purposeful activity in the forum. Now, the stream of commerce test is kind of a substitute. If you purposely put your product into a stream of commerce and it is a full stream, not a splash or a trickle, then you can also, you'll know where the product is going, and that's purposeful activity. But in this case, it's unfair for CMMC to be hailed into the court in Texas because they didn't try to sell this to anyone in Texas. They didn't market it. People came to them and asked to buy the product. They didn't do any of the purposeful conduct.
Do you agree that CMMC knew Hill Country was in Texas?
Your Honor, I'm not going to disagree with that, no.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument and the third cause and completes our oral submission docket. Foregoing causes are submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All eyes. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.